This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Paolo Delvecchio is the director of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Center for Mental Health Services. He's been in that job since 2012. Delvecchio will be the keynote speaker for the Kalamazoo Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services Mental Health Celebration and Breakfast May 4th at the Radisson in downtown Kalamazoo. Paolo Delvecchio, thank you for making some time to speak with us.
Happy to be here with you today.
How much has the field of mental health and substance abuse policy and research changed over the course of your career?
Well, I think we've seen dramatic changes in many ways about how we as a nation address mental illness and mental health, and issues about improvements in treatment, people's awareness around mental illness and mental health issues is perhaps like never before. At the same time, we have a great deal of work yet to do to make sure that everyone who lives with a mental illness get access to the care and treatment that's best for them.
How much is stigma still a hurdle where people don't feel comfortable seeking out help or worry that someone's going to find out that maybe they have some sort of mental illness or an addiction?
Well, Gordon, that's a great question. I think what we've called stigma in the past continues to hinder people from seeking, needed care. When we know that one in five people in any given year will experience a mental health problem, and yet only about one half of those individuals actually seek treatment themselves. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Certainly, cost is a major factor. Health insurance doesn't necessarily cover always mental health conditions as it should. At the same time, fear and issues of people being open about their mental illness. In many ways, Gordon, although we've made strides, it's still an issue that's kept in the closet.
Is the reporting, though, getting somewhat better? That, you mentioned that figure of one in five people will experience some sort of mental illness over the course of a year. Is reporting better in such a way that we have a better handle on that now than we might have had a decade or 15 years ago?
I believe we have, certainly with the increased awareness around mental health issues. We're seeing increased demand for care and identification of people at risk for these conditions. We're training more and more people, school teachers, pediatricians, and others to help identify signs and symptoms of mental illness. So, yes, I think we've done a better job of the reporting and identification.
You mentioned there pediatricians and teachers. One of the things that you have looked at is depression amongst children. Is this kind of a subject that is maybe a little tougher to get at because of maybe the sort of taboo nature of it, I guess?
Part of the issues there, and this is really troubling, Gordon, is that we're seeing increased rates of depression, particularly among our nation's youth. And the data that we collect at our federal agency shows those trends, in fact, increasing over the last 5 years in particular. And, we're looking at what is causing our young people to feel hopeless and despondent and depressed. Some have thought that perhaps the role of our new information age, social media, may be a factor, that while we're connected more electronically, that particularly for young people, the kind of interpersonal communication and relationships that we know are protective factors may be impacted. So that's just one thing that we're looking at right now.
Is it also possible, though, that by reading social media, we might get a better handle on when children do feel that way, that perhaps they put something on Facebook or Instagram or wherever that gives us a clue that this is an area where we need to step in?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, all the various social media today that particularly our youth use can be helpful in terms of that identification through our work. We work, for instance, with Facebook in helping identify users who may be considering suicide and then referring people to our National Suicide Prevention Lifeline to seek help when needed.
How far do we have to go to make mental health part of the overall debate that we still seem to be having about healthcare policy in the United States?
Well, I think this is still a debate. And I think one of the things we've seen in terms of parity for insurance coverage, for instance, and that's a major national mental health policy debate. And while we have the legislation in place, the amount of equal coverage for mental health as well as physical health conditions is not on par as of yet. That, again, here's another area where we still have a ways to go yet to assure that mental health care is on equal with physical health care in terms of how we pay for it.
And do we have some good data on the effectiveness of treating mental health? If someone does seek out help, are they likely to improve over a period of time?
We do know that treatment is effective. What we know in particular that's helpful is looking at an individualized, comprehensive, holistic approach to health and mental health. That medications, psychotherapy can be important and are important, but we also need to look at other aspects of an individual's life, like housing and employment, factors that definitely have an impact on our mental well-being.
And if somebody is out there thinking that they may be suffering from some sort of mental illness, what do you say to them in terms of where's the right place to turn to find out if, you know, A, that is the case, to get an accurate diagnosis, and furthermore, to get quality treatment?
Well, I do want to say if someone's in immediate need and if someone's in crisis, to contact our National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And that number is 1-800-273-8255. And I'll repeat that. Our Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. The other thing I would certainly encourage people to do is to talk to your primary care doctor. And that can help link you to needed specialty mental health care and encourage people to do that as soon as possible.
So your biography describes you as a self-identified mental health consumer, trauma survivor, and person in recovery from addictions. Can you fill us in a little bit more on all of those things?
Sure, Gordon. So I bring a lot of hats to the work that I do. And here at this federal agency, I am a person with lived experience having suffered mental illness for most of my life. I grew up in a family that knew mental illnesses very well, in that my father was a child psychologist. He was also a Korean War vet. And he didn't talk a lot about his battlefield experiences, but dealt with it through the bottle and frankly was had an undiagnosed alcohol problem for the rest of his life. And my earliest memories are from some of the domestic violence I experienced at my household and the trauma that I experienced from that. And like many people with mental illness, those early childhood traumas can have an impact on our future mental well-being, and I think that was the case for me. From that, I tried to seek care and found that the biggest barrier were the beliefs of my fellow students. What's wrong with you? Are you crazy? Are you psycho? And that turned me away from seeking care for 20 years, that stigma that we talked about earlier. Instead, like many of us, I turned to drugs and alcohol to deal with the pain I was feeling and to try to soothe these feelings I was having. I went on, and for many of us, issues of that transition age years, the young adult period, is the hardest. And for me, I found myself wanting to end my life in front of a subway train in the city of Philadelphia. And I left that subway platform to try to get some help, and I found a mental health career. I found that by giving back to others that I could really help myself. And I found that treatment was effective. I went back to care. I found that recovery is possible, that people can and do overcome these issues and live happy and full life. And Gordon, I dedicated my life and my career to mental health after that.
Is it common in the mental health field that somebody has experienced something like you have, either firsthand or maybe a family member or both have suffered mental illness along the way?
I think it is very common. We often talk about wounded healers, and that that really brings to us understanding and a passion for this important work. I also want to say that we've seen one of the developments over the last two decades has been the use of people with lived experience, peers, helping to provide services and care. And I know that's occurring in Michigan for many years as well.
Yeah. How important is that, that somebody who is perhaps seeking help for mental health can actually talk to somebody, or substance abuse, or both, can talk to somebody who understands that, you know, for lack of a better term, has walked those streets?
I think it can be critically important, you know, having someone who has been there, someone that you can relate to and connect with, someone who can help show you the ropes, how to navigate services and systems. And that's the value that these kind of peer providers, as we call them, really bring to helping improve mental health in this nation.
How was that transition from consumer to professional in the field?
Well, I think there, again, we've made a lot of progress. And when I started in this work, the idea of consumers and peers doing this kind of work was still pretty foreign. Two decades later, we're seeing literally thousands of people with lived experience being hired in jobs across the country. You know, but at the same time, again, we know that some of these negative attitudes continue to persist. So the ideas researchers track, people's attitudes, like, would you want to marry a person who experienced depression? Or would you want a coworker with schizophrenia? And negative answers to those responses have actually increased over the last two decades as well. So we still have a lot of work to do.
Does that number surprise you, that it's increased with, you know, all of the various, you know, public service campaigns, et cetera, to try to educate people about mental illness?
I think it is, you know, somewhat still surprising. I think when we look at the role of you as the media, we know that most people get their information about mental illness and mental health, and frankly, through the entertainment industry, through TVs and film. One of the efforts that we do is called the Voice Awards. And here we recognize TV and film productions that do a good job, an accurate, respectful job in terms of depicting mental illness and addiction issues. This year we'll be holding our 12th annual Voice Awards in Hollywood in August.
Is there a case to be made for mental health policy that kind of goes beyond, you know, the humanitarian good, that goes beyond, hey, this is helping your fellow citizen, this may be helping a family member, to it's better overall for society if we have good mental health treatment?
Absolutely. We know that economic impact alone of mental illness is huge. When we look at issues, for instance, about employment and the impact that mental health illness has on sick days and people being able to work, estimated in the billions of dollars. So from a business case alone, it's important for us to look at mental health and mental illness.
Paolo Delvecchio is the director of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Center for Mental Health Services. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Delvecchio will be the keynote speaker for the Kalamazoo Community Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services Mental Health Celebration and Breakfast May 4th at the Radisson in downtown Kalamazoo. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.